All right, I'm here with David and Anton. Tell us who you are and what you do at Microsoft.
I'm Dave Jones. I'm an executive producer and program manager in the envisioning team at Microsoft. And this is...
And I'm Anton. I run the Office Envisioning team.
And we're here in the Envisioning Center at Microsoft. This used to be called the Home of the Future. Tell us about this space and what it's used for now.
Well, actually, it's a combination of what used to be the home and the Center for Information Work, or the old Envisioning Lab. We combined the two facilities to build this one facility. And it's a place where we bring our customers and partners when they come to visit Microsoft to come experience some of the ideas we're thinking about for the future.
Yeah, our team is tasked with looking at the future of productivity. You know, what will everyday productivity scenarios look like 5 to 10 years from now? And we do that in a variety of ways. We do research, obviously, to build the vision. But then what are the big shifts, the big trends? You know, the world of work is changing in some really fundamental ways. But then we quickly move on to creating prototypes, and we put those prototypes on stage here in the Envisioning Center to show our customers and our internal teams. And then every 2 years or so, we make a vision video, like the one that we're going to talk about today.
How much is this space used as like a lab to see what works well and what you'd like to tweak, or is that done somewhere else?
The reason we put our demos in here is to get feedback on them. We want to talk about these ideas with customers and hear, you know, their unique perspectives from their, you know, cultures or from their business angles, like what's useful, what's not useful, what are they experiencing in their business that might be unique to them, so we can fold that into our thinking. So in a sense, it is a lab that's you know, operating 24/7 in that capacity.
So we recently released another Envisioning video, and today we want to talk about that video. I want to debrief you, find out where the ideas came from, but tell us about those videos. Why do we do those, and how often do we do them?
So we do the videos every 2 to 3 years, and the reason we do them is to help us have these conversations about the future of productivity with our customers. You know, they feel the world changing, they see the same change as we do, and they want to know, like, where are we going? You know, where do we want things to go? And if we gather up these ideas from around the company and we sort of synthesize it into a plausible, realistic, yet provocative vision, and that gives us a great basis to start having these conversations.
Go ahead.
We also, one of our audiences is the customer, definitely, and we also place a lot of value on bringing internal engineering teams through here. And so we get our design teams, our engineering teams, our PM teams coming through here. They see their own ideas reflected back to them, but set, you know, a little bit further out into the future. And that provokes a really healthy debate and discussion. Often, you know, people in any company who are shipping product, they're very heads down and they're working on the current instantiation of whatever it is. And when they see it in this larger holistic setting, it becomes very inspiring, and you generate this dialogue that actually moves the whole thing forward.
Yeah, it's a very useful internal tool as well, yeah, to have those same internal discussions. Yeah.
Are the videos meant to be correct, or are they just throwing a flag out in the future?
Yeah, they're not meant to be true. I mean, I think the idea is that, you know, everything you see in the video is based on real work being done somewhere in Microsoft, whether that's in a product division or in Microsoft Research in TNR. But at the same time, you know, we try and paint the picture of a world that is a little further down the line of the trends and the shifts that we see happening right now. And of course, nobody can predict accurately what the world is going to be like exactly 5 to 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Really, they're meant to provoke discussion. Mm-hmm. So the idea is not to be correct, but to provoke discussion with our customers and with our internal teams.
But it's a plausible future, though. There's no science fiction in the video. It's all based on real tech and solving real problems.
I noticed in the 2019 video that we did, aside from some of the hardware that they showed, there really was nothing in there that couldn't be done today with software. Yeah. So that's one of the things that stood out to me. It's just really interesting is that these are things that are possible.
And
the hardware
happening.
Wise, there's things that need to happen, some battery things and a processor. But it looks like a real-world scenario.
Yeah, actually, we get asked a lot about the hardware in the video and whether it's science fiction. None of the hardware in the video is science fiction. The hardest thing in the video is stitching together all the databases and software to work as fluidly and seamlessly as it does. And really, in a way, that's the most blue sky thing.
Yeah.
Each individual piece of hardware and each individual software interaction and so on, all of that could be done, you know, in the very near future, if not today.
So how do you determine what pieces of hardware will go in a video?
Well, we talk to folks who are working on hardware, and we look at where you know the various fundamental technologies are going, and we look at cost curves and figure out, okay, what's reasonable? What could be plausible in the 5 to 10 year time frame? Mm-hmm. And then what is useful? You know, we want it to actually be solving a real problem. And then when we find those that intersection of usefulness, inspiration, and feasibility, then we decide to put in the video.
Is your do you really hope to inspire people inside of Microsoft or partners and developers outside of Microsoft, or a little bit of both?
All of the above. I mean, yeah. There's no limit to, there's no bounds to the inspiration that we hope to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the last video, the music came from one of the members of Skinny Puppy.
Yes, yeah. So we worked with Mark Walk again. He's a great guy to work with.
Actually, you did a lot of the audio.
Basically, it was me
work.
And Mark. Yeah. And I'm not a musician, and it was a great learning experience, and I really enjoyed it. And we're really pleased with the quality of the piece that came out. There's multiple sections.
Skinny Puppy. Yeah, he put a lot of effort into it again this time around. So we wanted that. Yeah. There's a bit of a shift in tone in the video towards a more warm, gritty, human sort of feel, and the music is part of that.
It has a nice consistent theme through all the videos that I like.
And there's actually three audio layers. We also have sound design and we have vocals for the first time. And that's something we're sort of figuring out how to work into our future videos. Because as voice interaction becomes more and more common, we have to start figuring out, okay, we got to show that in the videos.
Yeah.
This is probably the last silent, you know, with audio video that we do. The next one's probably going to have dialogue, which takes it to a whole different level, of course.
So in this most recent video, it opens with a diver using what looks like kind of a HoloLens experience. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, that's actually a Be With Me scenario. So the idea is that, you know, we have this diver, this marine biologist underwater, and she's seeing through her dive mask, which is equipped with HoloLens technology, she's able to see personalized dive critical information in the world around her. So we call that mixed reality. Mm-hmm. It's different to augmented reality and virtual reality, where you really see holograms in your world and you can interact with them as you see in the video. And then as we pull out, we realize that, you know, someone's inking in her field of view, a dialogue starts, who's she talking with? We pull out, you realize that she actually has an entire classroom of kids with her on the dive who are all experiencing what she's experiencing. And that's really the aim of that opening scene.
So the kids can draw sharks in front of her and
exactly.
see it on her lens.
And also there's a good story here about HoloLens itself. When we started the video, HoloLens, of course, was a secret project. And so we had to work very carefully to not give anything away. So that's why we put the experience underwater attached to a full-face dive mask. Because in our previous video in 2021, if you remember, Isla shows up at the Johannesburg airport, puts on her glasses. Originally, that was meant to be a HoloLens scenario, until the HoloLens team found out about it and said, you can't show that. so we ended up with translating glasses.
This time we worked closely with
them.
Yeah.
One of the hazards of doing future vision videos.
So one of the things that stood out in the 2019 video is that Ian Sands, when I interviewed him, he said, you know, we see the future as the ability to have screens everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a tip in the hand towards what we were heading towards. And at the time, it seemed a little unrealistic. How could I have screens everywhere? But now we can see that that is a plausible scenario.
Yeah, there's two things happening. Also, you know, remember the cost of screens is dropping very rapidly.
Yeah.
It's going to get to the point where you can really just, you know, put it on like wallpaper. Mm-hmm. But then there's also these sort of more personal screens like from HoloLens where you can, it's a wearable technology.
It's also, you know, if we think about the world today, we're in the full swing of a mobility revolution. And I wouldn't say that the vision is about having screens everywhere anymore. I think we've moved past that point now. What we show in the video is this interplay between your personal mobile devices that you have with you that you get a lot of work done on, and these more architecturally embedded displays and surfaces like Surface Hub and so on. And there's this very fluid mobility that you achieve when you're able to move, whether that's outdoors or in a work environment, you're able to move around very, very fluidly and sort of switch and interplay between your personal mobile device and these larger architectural devices.
I like the idea of the devices in our world speaking to us. Yeah. So with HoloLens, if I look at my phone, I'd like to be able to see what the battery life is from across the room. And so having these different devices communicate to each other and paint reality is
I'd like to add on to what Anton said. The vision is not for screens to be everywhere. We don't want screens. Well, the vision is to have personalized contextual information available where and when you need it. Mm-hmm. And screens are currently the most effective way of doing that, but that won't be forever.
And we're rapidly moving past the screen. You know, so in the video we show HoloLens, obviously. At the end of the video we also show glasses-free holograms being used. Again, that's not blue sky. It's something that is already in development today. And when you see that kind of technology, you realize that the two-dimensional screen that we've been locked into for so long is really only one way of displaying information. There are going to be many more in the future. And as we think about mobility, Internet of Things, holograms, I think we're going to rapidly get beyond the screen.
So the glassesless hologram was one that I looked at and I was like, wow, that's kind of new. I haven't seen that in a lot of places. But she wasn't using contact lenses
or
something like that?
No, that's a simulated holographic display. Basically, when you look at one, it uses head tracking to beam the light into your eyes, and so you see what appears to be a 3D hologram in front of you as long as you are looking at the screen.
So it's like one of those chalk diagrams on a sidewalk that looks like it's...
Yeah,
but
effectively,
it's kind of stretched.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so if you looked at it from another angle, it wouldn't necessarily look the same.
And we're, like lyrics to a song, we're intentionally vague about some of these things. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are glasses-free holographic displays coming. But at the same time, it may well be, contact lenses and the future of HoloLens. And we leave that sort of open to interpretation on purpose, because both of those scenarios will likely be true at some point in time. So choose your moment in time.
So the contact lens one is a good example, because we have done research on that. And we choose not to put it in the videos because there's some fundamental problems with contact lenses.
Yeah.
Stabilization and heat. We have a sample of one. There's a little tiny display and a contact lens. So this is an example of where we won't put something that's just there's problems that haven't yet been solved in the video.
Interesting. So in the beginning of the video, when after we leave the diver and we show this classroom setting, we see a couple different things that if you follow Microsoft closely, you'll know that we have a lot of research in. One is the ability for different areas to work together on a wall. Talk about that, and we even have kind of an example of that behind us here.
Right, yeah.
What is the idea between collaboration at a distance?
We're really interested in near and far. I mean, collaboration is one of the key themes for the future of productivity. We increasingly get stuff done together more than we do alone. This idea of the lone genius or sitting in a log cabin in the woods and doing all the work, that's kind of not today's reality anymore.
Yeah.
The world is moving faster, it's more interconnected, we have to work as teams. Teams are becoming more important. And so what are the different ways in which we can support collaboration? The kind of large whiteboard type scenarios are one way in which we can support collaboration, but not the only way. And when we look at those scenarios, we think about near and far interaction.
So there's shoulder to shoulder, where you see people working together on the blackboard, mm-hmm. using devices, using touch, using voice, using pen, using ink-based interfaces to work on real work together.
Storing a history so you can go back and look at previous iterations.
Exactly. Also, you notice when they walked into the room, they sort of rehydrated the wall with their project workspaces. So you can pick up a meeting that you finished 2 weeks ago, and let's kind of resume it and keep going.
As they were working as a group, one person standing further back, maybe sitting down, using her mobile phone or her phablet or her tablet. And so those, you don't have to be at the whiteboard. On the other hand, we have a person join remotely who appears on the whiteboard, and she's able to touch and interact with the same BI graphics that the people in the room are. And so it's almost as if she was there working shoulder
to
shoulder.
Like on the other side of a piece of glass or something.
Right,
it's like
exactly.
They're right there with you.
And she might be a continent away.
So we also saw in the classroom what looked like a clip 3D printer. So 3D printing
is
obviously...
It's a Formlabs 3D printer, yeah.
Yeah, so it's obviously going to be an important part of the future. What were your thoughts around 3D printing? 5 to 10 years out?
To talk about the classroom first, we wanted to show a bunch of students using technology to assist their learning. And basically, they're just pursuing their own interests related to the marine biology lesson that they were involved in. And so some kids were printing out different seashells to look at the structures. And some kids were sketching because they're more visually oriented. And some kids were using the microscope to study the cellular structure of the kelp. And so we saw just people using technology to help them follow their passion. For 3D printing in particular, we just think that it's going to be widely available. And people are going to be able to produce whatever they want, multi-material parts, whether they do it in their home, the school, or at sort of a local production facility. We think it's going to, you know, be an important part of our future.
It's part of the texture of the world, you know, which is why we put it in there. And because that classroom of kids was following Kat, our main character, on her dive, she's a marine biologist, and they're all, you know, classrooms today are much more focused on the different learning abilities of different children and what their different interests. And we wanted to support the teacher in the classroom. And so each of the groups of children is following a different aspect of the dive. You know, one group is printing out a starfish, another group is illustrating. A third group is rewinding in her point of view and discovering a stingray that she might have passed 10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And the teacher is working with them to help them learn about stingrays. And so it was very much about supporting the learning environment and supporting the teacher.
Were there any things that you would have liked to include in the video that just didn't come across well? One thing that comes to mind is haptics.
That's kind of hard to get across because that's a sort of an experiential thing. It's not a visual thing. We did want to include more robotics in the video, but as it turns out, robots are very expensive and hard to work with and dangerous. Yeah. So we had to settle
like
for the underwater drones.
In video.
Yeah,
exactly.
But we got our underwater drones in at the end. Yeah. We threw the drones in. They swam off and were collecting data from the kelp farm. So
we almost got arrested because of those drones.
Yeah.
Actually, we almost got arrested twice.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So a couple of hints. If you're going to go to Vietnam, don't go flying camera drones near military bases.
Noted.
Not a good idea without telling them about it. And number two, don't pack mysterious metallic cylindrical things in your luggage.
That look like bombs.
That look like bombs, yeah.
Very bad idea.
A pile of them. Yeah, exactly. Suitcase full of grenades.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a group of five men in dark suits descend on us in the airport.
So that reminded me when I saw that part of the video that we had that demo at PDC 2008 where MSR showed how they had sensors hanging all over from the ceiling. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like an extension of that and it's just with mobility added
exactly.
to it.
Exactly. Our ability to sense data from the world and gather it and process it and then, you know, do predictive intelligence on top of it is, you know, growing very quickly.
Well, we often use the Tyson Krupp example with elevators, you know, and the Seahawks and so on. And this is really the same thing, is drones connected to cloud analytics and predictive intelligence. And we use predictive intelligence in a couple of places in the video, and that's one of them. Another one is the bracelet scene, for example.
So another thing that I noticed in the video, there was a lot of throwing content between devices, which as we keep adding more and more devices to the world that we live in, it seems like that's a natural extension of that. What were the thoughts behind that?
You want to be able to move your experience across devices. You shouldn't be confined to one device. Mm-hmm. And so we show that in multiple places in the video. And we show that in the space working today. It's not a technical problem. It's just...
And with OneDrive, we're almost to that point today where you can have documents and things.
Yeah.
So it's like an extension of that experience.
It should be as easy. I want this over there. And it should just work.
And the tactic of throwing is less important than the idea of mobility of experience, which is the key idea.
So let's talk about the device she was using in the restaurant that was looked like a fabric, some kind of digital fabric.
Flexible notebook, yeah.
Yeah. What was the thought behind that? Was it real fabric and the idea, or is it all screen and
it just looks
like fabric?
It's all screen, both sides. So again, the idea is just picking up on, with these vision videos, part of it is what we're doing and part of it is just where the world is heading. And you know, there is increasing momentum again today around flexible displays. And so we thought that we should include one. What happens on that flexible display, of course, is all of the things that we're interested in, you know, contextual intelligence, understanding your intent and delivering the right things and the right conversations and the right information to you at the right time, allowing you to work on this very organic, fluid canvas. But the flexible display itself is basically texture, because that's what's happening in the world around
us. But it gives you a nice combination of both, you know, mobility, because you can fold it up, but also more screen real estate when you open it. And we did put displays on both sides. And you notice when she, so the texture was is basically just, you know, that's software. But then when she arrives at the cafe, because we know where she is, the menu for the cafe shows up, and she's able to order her tea right there on the front. And then when she opens it up, you see her, her feeds and her workspace, and she gets down to work. And then going back to your question on collaboration, you can also see her working in that workspace with her remote colleagues, and you can see them actively, you know, working in the space.
So is the thought that there could be like an NFC sensor in the table, and by setting your device down on it, it picks up where you're at and would load the menu?
Not even. I mean, now, you know, we're increasingly using beacons in retail environments. And so imagine the cafe has a very simple beacon. And you walk into the cafe with your mobile device, which in this case is a flexible notebook. Why wouldn't you get the contextual menu, which is the cafe menu, so that you can order tea?
I mean, you're that's there what you're for a reason.
There's all sorts of really interesting research happening around sort of close proximity communication. We even I don't know if I can talk about it, but if I can, if I can't, you can cut it out. But for example, using just light, modulating LED light with information. So you could, if you know when you're in the restaurant, because you can read the signal from the lights and say, okay, you can display the menu.
So we also see in the bracelet that was displayed that it was picking up properties of other patterns and fabrics, and so you could have your wristband match your outfit.
Yeah,
and I guess it would be the same
moment.
With the notebook too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Tell us about that wristband device. What was the thought behind that?
So a couple of thoughts there. I mean, one is obviously we think we'll all have smartphones 5 to 10 years from now, but we didn't feel that that was a particularly interesting thing to show in a vision video. So we focused more on the wearables, so the earpiece, the band, and so on. And then this particular band, it can unfold, and it becomes flat, so it can sort of transition between being something like today's smartphone and something like a wrist wearable. When we thought about that on the wrist, we wanted it to be a very fashionable device as opposed to a piece of tech. And so you see her transferring a pattern onto it, and there's no UI at all. There's no apparent screen because it's all display. And so that is a little bit further out in terms of feasibility. But it's something we wanted to experiment with and just articulate in the video.
Well, as we saw with the original Surface, I mean, having a fourth pixel that acts as a camera, it's certainly something that would be possible at some point.
Or maybe there's just a tiny camera built into it. I mean, it doesn't have to even be into the screen.
Interesting.
And the
there's the two parts as well.
Yeah, the band actually snaps together, and you know, magnetically, which is tricky as well.
And unfolds.
And we also see her interacting with the device using like muscles.
Muscle computer interface.
Muscle computing.
That's from,
and that's something
Microsoft
straight
Research.
From MSR.
Exactly.
We see
exactly.
that Tech Fest.
Yeah. Disney Tan, exactly. And so that's all entirely feasible. And the big thing with the band interaction was predictive intelligence, you know. She's having a night out with the girls. Important message comes in. It's important enough that it breaks through the sort of invisible barrier of the fact that she's having fun. And you know, because it's a meeting the next morning where she has brunch scheduled, you would normally go into, oh God, I got to reschedule brunch. You know, communicate with my friends. I need space to prepare tonight for this meeting tomorrow. And instead of all of that happening, which might take 20 minutes, half an hour, you know, she predictive intelligence kicks in. Cortana says, would you like to shift brunch? Here's a potential time. Would you like somewhere to prepare? Here's a co-working space nearby. Do you want the bicycle route? All she does is say yes 3 times, and it takes about 5 seconds, and she's on her way, instead of 20 minutes of agonizing and
fiddling.
Pulling up email and fiddling.
The wrist device was one of the most interesting things in the video to me, because it uses so many different NUI interactions.
Yes.
I mean, it's probably using voice from the earpiece.
Yep.
It's got a camera, it has touch, she's using muscles to control parts of the device. It must have put a lot of thought into that. What were all the different areas that you looked at for that type of device?
I mean, yes to the above. I mean, we're looking at different ways people, you can get input from muscles, from motion, the balance between screen real estate and sort of just, you know, jewelry, essentially.
And which device is it on? I think this idea of cross-modality that you mentioned, you know, using voice, touch, ink, keyboard, gesture interchangeably, it's really a bigger thing for us. It's not just about that one device. Mm-hmm. And you see it happening throughout the video where you don't have to choose. Today we have to choose. I'm going to use a device that uses keyboard and mouse. I'm going to use a device that uses pen. I'm going to use a voice. We think you should be able to use them interchangeably and very fluidly. Mm-hmm. And go from, you know, thought to action, from 0 to 60 very, very quickly.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really liked about the videos. It wasn't trying to steer us towards a future that's, you know, in just one modality of interaction. Mm. But if you like keyboard and mouse, use a keyboard and mouse. Yeah. It's it gives you the options.
And that goes back to one of the purposes of the videos. We like to show a broad spectrum of ideas, and so different customers can watch it and sort of cue into the thing that they want to talk about or that they've been thinking about. Mm-hmm. And that's the conversation starter. And you hear people referring back to, like the bracelet, or like the blackboard, or like the, you know, and that's, you know, we know we succeeded because we've got the idea in their head and now they're referring to it.
One of the other ways we use the bracelet was to create, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now about mindfulness at work and being able to protect your focus and your flow. And at one point she's in this co-working space and she's working at a desk, and she has her earpiece in and her band on, and we can, you know, with today's band, we can sense galvanic skin response, heart rate, respiration. Mm-hmm. We can sense all these things. There are actually algorithms today that allow you to detect, using those things, whether you're going into a state of flow. And what we show in the video is that the desk goes into a do not disturb mode, and it shuts out, suppresses irrelevant incoming communication.
I would love that.
Yes. As it turns red and lets other people around, like, don't disturb.
It's and that speaks to a bigger theme. You know, we're all overwhelmed, we're inundated with data, information, conversations, and so we need help to make sense of it all and to protect our workflow.
I didn't even pick up on that it was using your link color in the earpiece so people know not to bother you.
Exactly.
That's genius. I love that. And she was also on this Surface Hub that was in kind of a drafting table mode, which we've seen a couple of those around campus. Yeah. Is that the idea, is that this device can be used on a wall, in a conference room, or as a desk?
Yeah, we have one right there. I mean, we're experimenting with these drafting tables that are digital and interactive. And today, actually, they're already cheaper than a standard wooden ergonomic desk, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But you know, as that display tech becomes thinner and lighter weight and even cheaper, it'll start to become something where we have to ask ourselves whether or not we want to work on a horizontal surface or a vertical surface.
So a key technical trend there. Of course, we've been watching the cost curves come down. You just go to Costco and look at how cheap the big screen TVs are. But once you get up to 4K resolution, that's when you start to be able to read documents up close. And so suddenly, you know, a barrier that had been there for as long as we can remember is suddenly gone. And so I think there's a whole new world of opportunity around interactive desks in the future.
When you have this very crisp display.
Exactly. When you can read on it.
Yeah.
As she moves into her living room, we see what's almost a virtual bookcase, which I love, by the way.
Yeah.
And it kind of morphs into what looks like a holographic display of someone else in another location. Mm-hmm. Again, something that comes from Bengo over an MSR and others.
It's not a holographic
display. It's an auto-stereoscopic 3D display, which shows true parallax.
Yeah.
And you've probably experienced demos of that technology around Microsoft.
Yeah.
And the idea is, you know, that Lola can talk to her dad, as he might be living hundreds of miles away, but they feel as if they're in the same room together. And they can have that personal connection. They can chat back and forth. Feels like their rooms are connected. He just had some work done on his knee. He's got a bionic knee implant, so he's like sharing the data and talking about how great it's working. And they're having that sort of father-daughter intimate conversation moment.
It's very different to today's displays because as you walk past it, the perspective shifts. Whereas in today's displays, the image is on the screen. And so it doesn't matter where you stand, it looks the same.
Yeah, it feels like a window.
So it literally feels like a window into another space.
And it's similar to the views that we're looking at for the office scenarios and classrooms, but it's more personal. It's my living room connected to another family member's living room.
Exactly.
Exactly. And the idea there is this idea of high empathy connection. You know, as we get things done and work and live remotely more and more, you know, across continents, across distances, in a more and more global world with more and more travel, then these connections become more and more important. And today, they're not yet quite high empathy enough. And so when we start having true perspective, when we start being able to correct gaze and chin position, then you get these interactions that feel much more natural and real.
just under 5 minutes into the video, we see the king of all chalkboards. It's like the most interactive chalkboard you've ever seen.
The big black one.
Yeah, the big one.
Yeah. Again, is this an extension of like Surface Hub and collaboration, similar to pretty what much, we see behind you?
Yeah, there's two ways we could go with that. I mean, the Surface Hub, Surface team is, you know, the nirvana is being able to tile these screens together and make as big as you want.
Yeah.
You can also see behind us, there's technology that allows you to do the same thing with projectors. There are differing opinions on which will be the winner, but it doesn't matter. The fact is, it's clearly going to be possible in the very near future to be able to have, you know, as large interactive digital spaces as you'd like.
And we, you know, what you see happening on that chalkboard, you see smart ink, you see companion devices interacting with it, like her tablet. You see gesture, you see the remote participant showing up and interacting with the graphics. And all of that is based on, you know, work that is real. And a big underlying theme throughout the video also is this idea of contextual intelligence. And that's really a key thing for us, is this idea that we just can't deal with all of the information that's out there alone anymore. It's surpassed the threshold of our human ability to deal with it. People feel overwhelmed. There are a lot of statistics about this now. And so a big theme in the video, as well as collaboration, is this idea of contextual intelligence helping bring the right things to you at the right time so that you're not overwhelmed.
I love the idea of having a chalkboard that you just never run out of chalkboard. You can just keep swiping to new space and just continue on.
Yeah, the endless workspace. And it's always there, captured, so it's easy to get back to. It's just an integral part of your workflow.
So what part will machine learning play in the future in deciding how these devices interact with us, what we see, and how we're shut out from that when we want to be in a do not disturb?
It's going to play a role at so many different levels. Everything from just the way you interact naturally with digital agents, you know, Cortana just becoming smarter, becoming more and more like your personal executive assistant. Everything from devices being smarter about just figuring out how to best work together when they get into a room together. Mm-hmm. They could have their little digital conversation and get all ready to do whatever needs to get done. Everything gets smarter with machine learning.
Machine learning, cloud analytics, contextual intelligence, Cortana, you know, all of these things kind of roll up to a high-level system intelligence that will help us work in an increasingly fast-moving, unpredictable world that is more interconnected than it ever has been. And the amount of information coming at us has surpassed our ability as human beings to deal with it individually. And so we actually need this help to find our way through all of that information. Which of those conversations should I be paying attention to at any one moment in time?
Yeah.
Where is the information that I need? Do I even know that it exists? Does it come to me when I want it? And so we see that as pervading every layer of the interfaces and every layer of device interaction.
Also, it's going to be, you know, so the anticipative property is like anticipating your needs and saying, here are the three things you could use next. It's also, there's the filtering aspect where it's, okay, I'm just going to sort of filter down all this information just to the stuff that you most likely need. But then there's also the sort of like, and here's the stuff that you just might, this sort of serendipitous, you know, that's maybe a little weird, but hey, you know.
We'll take a shot.
We'll take a shot. Yeah. So there's going to be some interesting balance we're going to have to strike. And maybe it's a knob that you turn where someday I need inspiration or like, no, I need to focus.
My big serendipity knob just shows me the things I wouldn't have thought to look for
exactly,
myself.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for showing us this today. And can't wait to see what you do next.
Thanks for chatting with
us. Thank you.